This is issue number 23.5, the second helping of the Secret Identity Podcast.
Hello.
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 And welcome everyone to the second helping of issue number 23. This is 23.5 of the Secret Identity Podcast. This is Brian Letendry here again with Matt Man Herring.
Yes, hi, how are you again?
I'm great.
You look better than the last time I saw you.
Which was about 5 minutes ago, because we record these both on the same night.
Yes. And you know what we have to mention? I can't believe we went all the way through this without saying one phrase. Snakes on a plane.
Yes, snakes on a plane. By the time people hear this, snakes on a plane will have hit already.
It'll have been the rage.
But because we record on Fridays, we're going to see Snakes on a Plane tonight, and we will have our full review in the next second helping.
Snakes on a Plane is going to be this generation's Hammer time.
I couldn't agree more. I could not agree more. So with that, with the Snakes on a Plane segue, let's get right into our movies and television segment.
Let's get right to it.
How do you feel about the fact that Superman 2... may not happen?
When I read the notes, I was shocked. I can't imagine this.
Apparently.
It's hard for me to even fathom that this is not.
I don't have the hard numbers on this, but Superman Returns did not make enough money to guarantee a sequel yet.
So a gazillion dollars is not enough.
I don't believe that it has done well enough. I read the other day that the sequel is still in doubt. And may actually end up depending on how the DVD sells.
DVDs will sell. You know, DVDs seem to make more money than the actual domestic releases of these movies.
So what do you think that tells me one of two things. Either the production value on Superman was so high that they put themselves in a very deep hole in having to make the film profitable, or the film was not as well received as people thought it would be.
I think that's probably it. Plus, the hype machine around it was so big, that costs money. You can't just say, hey, you know what, can you guys, when you're putting your Captain Crunch boxes together, can you just throw Superman on there? That'd be great, thank you. It costs money to do stuff like that.
Yep.
And I mean, Superman was everywhere, so I imagine it was a lot of money. We hear our friend James in the other room laughing at something. What is he laughing at?
He's watching Metalocalypse, which I have told people for weeks now to go watch.
Yes.
On Adult Swim Fix. So James is getting his fix as we speak.
And but back to Superman, he was on every product, and that again, that cost a ton of money.
Yes.
And I wonder how much money they had to put into promoting this movie. Then at the same time, I wonder how much money did they have to put into it.
Well, in any case, we're going to be following this story very closely, because I know there are a couple of people here at this table that would like to see a sequel.
That's very upsetting.
Yeah, it is. So it just goes to show you, with the high cost of making movies today, that they really have to knock it out of the park in order to guarantee a sequel.
Yeah, happy birthday to me.
And, you know, you don't have to look any farther than Serenity.
Yeah,
to see a great example of that.
Yep.
So on a more positive note, Legion of Superheroes, the animated series, launches on September 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
On the kids WB.
I'm psyched. My only concern on shows on the WB, they never give you a time when it's going to be on. They'll say, weekdays, WB.
Well, and it's not even really going to be the WB anymore, because it's the WB that formed with UPN. Which is the CW, I think.
W. McCoy. Network.
But in any case, on Comics Continuum, and I'll put a link to this in the show notes, you can go see some of the screen captures for this show. And I was watching WB last weekend, because I was watching Batman.
Yeah.
with my daughter, and they showed a trailer for it.
How's it look?
It looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think you'll be pleased with the animation. It's definitely different, but it's not Teen Titans.
Yeah.
So.
And you know what's funny? My middle daughter, Rebecca, just came in with two paintings. One of Batman, one of Spider-Man. That can only mean one thing.
That Benoit's here.
Benoit is in the hizzy.
I'm not going to turn around because I don't want to get distracted. I'll have to turn around in a moment.
Oh, boy, they look good.
So also launching in September on the Cartoon Network is the new Fantastic Four animated series.
Now, didn't Cartoon Network go on this big bandwagon about not using any licensed properties anymore? Blah, 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 blah.
Interestingly enough, this is a Marvel property.
Yes, so...
And not a DC property.
Apparently, when they meant they weren't going to do any more licensed property... They just meant DC.
Which tells me that it might not be so much about the licensed property. It might be more about somebody had a falling out with DC, maybe? Who knows? Mm. Could be.
Could be.
But I looked at the animation for Fantastic Four, and it looks to be much better than the ill-fated 1990s...
That was horrible.
...worst cartoon ever. I mean, I would take that... What was it? Herbie the Robot?
That was good stuff.
I would take that 10 times over.
Yeah.
Over the one that came out in the 90s. I obviously had overly romanticized that because I picked it up to watch it with my daughter, and like, I could not even get past the first episode.
You borrowed it from me, I believe, and then you brought it right back an hour later.
I was like, ugh.
You brought it back and slapped me.
That made the Ultimate Avengers artwork and animation look like it was Ninja Scroll, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
But yeah. So that's starting up, so that's good news. Also an interesting tidbit this week, Dominic Purcell, who is on the show Prison Break, he's the brother who has been put on death row.
He's the whole point
wrongly.
Of Prison Break.
Right, he's the whole point of Prison Break, is rumored to be in the running for Bruce Banner, for the Incredible Hulk role.
So they are completely...
Yes.
They're gutting everything.
Yeah, if we haven't talked about this before, I can't remember if we mentioned it, but the new movie is going to be called The Incredible Hulk. He's going to be facing off against the...
Was it the leader or Annihilation?
I think it was maybe the leader. The Abomination.
Abomination.
The Abomination is what he's facing off against. And it's going to be much truer to the comic book. So this tells me they are moving away from the old version and doing a complete reimagining of this. But I looked at a picture of this guy. He would be good.
Yeah.
I think he would be good.
So they're going away from the CGI Hulk then?
Well...
Oh, no, they want him as Bruce Banner.
Yeah, he couldn't be...
Yeah, you're
he's
right.
He's not that big.
No.
But he'd be good. I think he looks good to be that. And our final movie and television thing of the week is that Matt and I both watched The Ultimate Avengers 2 this past weekend and had very different opinions of that.
Yes.
I really liked it. And Matt, not so much.
I didn't like it that much.
Well, let me tell you why I liked it first, and then you can tell me why you didn't like it. And again, for anyone that didn't know, Ultimate Avengers 2 is the continuing saga of the Ultimates, if you will, that are animated, and it's the second of Marvel's direct-to-DVD animated movies. It's PG-13. It's meant for a slightly more mature audience. I really like this one. This is the one about the Black Panther.
Yep.
And you start out right from the beginning, and the aliens from the previous Ultimate Avengers movie are still present here on Earth. And it begins with, I forget what the name, is it Wakanda?
Yes.
Wakanda is the country that the Black Panther resides in, and it shows his father, who is T'Challa, I think, who was the Black Panther before him.
Yep.
And in the beginning of this, his father dons the Black Panther outfit to fight the aliens and ends up getting killed by the lead alien in this, who also happens to be disguised as a Nazi.
Mm-hmm.
I know that sounds very convoluted. What I liked about the beginning of this story is that it jumped right out of the box, action, brutal fighting, to the point where the lead character, gets killed within the first 5 minutes of the movie, pretty brutally. I mean, and that was a knockdown, drag-out fight with the aliens. And even though it's PG-13, when they're fighting aliens, they can get away with a lot more than if they're fighting people. And so it was pretty gruesome. I mean, it was a pretty brutal fight to begin with, and that was right out of the box.
Mm.
But the overall story is then the T'Challa, who is the Black Panther as we know him, then dons and has to protect his country and ends up begrudgingly enlisting the help of the Avengers to fend off this invasion of aliens. So I really liked it. I thought they did a nice job with it. Not enough Hulk for me, but an interesting storyline with the Hulk. So I'd like to hear why you didn't like it.
I like the story. The story was good. I had a lot of problems with the voices. I found Black Widow, who was voiced by, I think it's Miriam Diabo.
I think you're right.
She has a cousin that was an actress who was in the James Bond movie.
Uh-huh.
But Miriam, it just was annoying after a while.
Yeah, she was definitely your prototypical.
It was over Russian. Over Russian.
It was
American.
Like Rocky and Bullwinkle. Boris and Natasha.
It was very caricature in the inflection of the words.
Okay.
I didn't like that. I just thought it was way too rushed. And it seemed like they said, look, we got about 20 minutes left over from the first movie. Why don't we just make a number two right now? I didn't like that. The animation would have been good if it was a half-hour show, but it's a movie. I expected maybe a little more. You were dead on with the animation problems.
Yeah, and I guess because I had those gripes going in, I sort of was able to put those on a shelf and say, all right, I'm just going to watch this for the story and see how it is. I liked it because I thought they took some chances with this. I mean, Hank Pym.
Yeah, killing him.
Dead at the end of this one.
I like how they had the dynamic between the two.
Yes, without him being overtly abusive.
And chasing her around with bug spray.
Right, you could tell that they have a very strained relationship. There was elements of it that were tacked on. Yeah. I mean, the Black Widow's relationship with Captain America is kind of cheesy, especially the way that she, with her accent and everything, it is. But
what
overall,
are you doing, Steve? After a while, I was like, just stop talking.
And I, you know, the aliens as, and I didn't follow the Ultimates as a comic, so I don't know if this alien invasion was a big part of the Ultimates.
I don't think it was, and I'm trying to go back. I don't think it was.
Okay.
I don't even think they were mentioned. But I mean, there is an alien invasion going now in Ultimates too, but it's not the Shi'ari or whatever they were.
It's very War of the Worlds, like their technology and the way that they,
I'm glad you said that. This is the bigger problem I had with it. This was Independence Day.
Yep.
But with Iron Man. Instead of the ship going in, piloted by Will Smith, it was Iron Man flying in and blowing up the core. And I think the best part of the
I was
DVD,
just going to say, even though we don't agree on the movie,
the gag reels,
it's a must rent, at least.
For the gag reels.
Because they have a gag reel on there that is one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And kudos to Marvel for thinking of, geez, we have this animated product. What can we do with it that would be really fun? And what they did was they ended up replaying some scenes from very famous geek movies, but doing them with the characters of the Marvel Universe. Like they did a scene of Star Wars.
Empire Strikes Back.
Empire Strikes Back.
Farting and burping.
They did a couple other ones too. Yeah, Thor was just farting and burping in every take, and it was a true gag reel.
Yeah.
Where Tony Stark had this preoccupation with ribs.
Yes.
And in every scene, he would come in and say, "Oh, you're lucky. I was just across the street at a rib joint." Or, "Hey, after we were done here, you want to go grab some ribs? There's this great ribs place." And then the last thing they show is that he owns a rib place himself. So very funny. And there's other extras in there
as
well.
The interview with Mark Miller.
Yep.
And Brian Hitch
is
excellent. And it was funny because while we were watching it, I kept telling my wife, I kept saying, it's Millar, but it's pronounced Miller. Then they had Ralph Macchio, who's an editor at Marvel, going, well, I believe that when Mark Millar was writing it, and I started going, loser, it's Millar, it's Miller, not Millar. And then she looked at me and said, Wang Wong.
Yep.
So, you know, I can understand that. But I thought that was kind of funny.
Yes.
But a great interview. You get a great insight to their work on the Ultimates.
Absolutely. And overall, I mean, even if you liked the extras better than the movie, it's worth a rental. And I picked it up at Hollywood Video and rented it there, so I know that it's on the shelves right now. If you like the first one, I think you'll like the second one. Matt didn't like it as much, but I thought it was interesting. And the other thing that it had on it, which really piqued my interest, was it had a preview of the upcoming Doctor Strange one.
Yeah.
And that one looks awesome.
I didn't even know that they were doing a Doctor Strange or an Iron Man one.
The Iron Man one, I mean, you already kind of know what to expect from Iron Man, but the Doctor Strange one, I really thought, I love Doctor Strange as a character, and I'm very excited for Brian K. Vaughan's series that's coming this fall, the limited series on Doctor Strange, and I can't wait to see the animated version. I think they're really going to do something neat with it. So check it out. Go check it out at your local video store. It's at least worth a rental and maybe worth a buy.
Yeah. And you know what? If you have to buy it just to make sure that they make another one, then do it.
There you go.
That's the way I look at it.
You want to support these things so that more of them will come out. Okay, so that's going to wrap it up for our movies and television segment. We are going to come right back with our What Do You Think About That discussion question for the week. And we are back, and we are also joined by James and Chris. Hello, guys.
Hello.
What's up?
We could almost do a hello.
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 Perfect.
Hi. We'll do that again.
Yep, and it's our discussion question of the week, and this one came from Matt this week because you got a little crazy.
Oh, I got angry.
When you started reading the internet this week. So why don't you tell us what your issue is that you want to discuss this week?
DC Nation, which is the little last page of all the DC books, usually with Dr. Phil's picture on it, had a little article about all these great books that DC are putting out. And I read it and I thought, well, that's really great. I used to love the anthology books like Mystery in Space, Tales of the Unexpected. These are the books that I really like. But then I kept reading, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, they're going to have an Omega Men series. Connor Hawke, who is the Green Lantern, or Green Arrow before his dad came back, long story, just can't keep going. He's going to have a miniseries. Now we're going to have Teen Titans East or West. Is it East or West? Whichever
East.
One.
It'll East. Be East to be the new ones.
A Raven miniseries. And these are not throwaways because Marv Wolfman's writing. So you got to get those. Plus, let's throw in Batman Confidential, which is going to have the best parts of Batman's life and career by a rotating creative team. And then you're going to have Superman Confidential, which is going to be the same thing, but of course it's going to be Batman. Now we're going to throw in, what were the other great ones? We've got Brave and the Bold, which is going to be the Batman team-up book, written by Mark Waid, and art is going to be by George Perez. As excited as I am about that.
Plus, you've got the Jeff Johns and Richard Donner run on Action, right?
Yeah.
Action Comics coming out.
My head hurts from all this. Plus, throw in Dead Man that just came out. Now, what books are going to suffer in this?
So, if I'm not mistaken, let me frame the question of the week. The question of the week is DC releasing too many titles?
Yes.
Is that the question? Is that the question we're answering here?
And
so,
the answer right now is yes.
For you, it's a resounding yes.
Yes, because I'm looking at these books going, I want to get every one of them. Every one of them means something. It's not like I just have to get them. What books are going to be taken off my sub list to make room? And it's not quite the financial decision yet. It easily could be. It's more of a timing thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have the time to read. I don't like anymore having that stack of 1,000 books by my bed going, and guys, I'm not looking in your direction, believe me. Looking over going, ooh, I got a big stack I still have to read, and I can't talk about these books because I haven't read them yet. I don't want to do that anymore. So all these books coming out is upsetting. My fear is it's going to be the companies like Dynamite Entertainment that are going to suffer. It's going to be a lot of the independent books. It's also now going to be a lot of some good books like Justice League of America coming out, number one. How many people are going to say, you know what, I don't want the relaunch? Nobody's going to say it because it's going to be a great book. But it's kind of killing any other projects that could possibly come out. And I've got some facts that once everybody talks.
Sure.
Some DC implosion facts, which I'll explain a little bit later.
Okay, so James, is DC releasing too many titles?
Oh, yeah. I think the suffering is occurring now. My body will not let me drop a Batman title. But right now, Nightwing to me is horrible. I like Bruce Jones as a writer. I haven't read Dead Man yet, but I think they're all just kind of starting to suffer. There's so many that are coming out, and I think the only person I know is almost as big of a DC guy as me is Matt.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there going, yeah, the Omega Men, they need a series. And yeah, these people are coming out. Friend of the show, Damien Scott's drawn the Connor Hawke series.
And that's one where I have to look at and say, you know what? I got to support him. I want to see his art on it. I love him as an artist.
And I want to see that. And, you know, the good thing is going to be that, you know, we're not going to have Marvel titles for 2 months thanks to Civil War being delayed. But
Your words hurt me.
But I just, you know, it's starting to remind me of back in 1991 when you can open the back page of your Marvel comic and see 200 comics listed for a subscription. And, you know, I've already started cutting DC books. That's so rare for me.
Yep.
You know, and it's just, you know, there's going to be a point in time where you're going to have to just keep cutting back because, yeah, there's a lot of good stuff out there, but if you keep, and especially writers, Jeff Johns is great, but if you have him writing 10 books, something's going to suffer. Yep. No one's that great. Mark Waid. If you have somebody spreads too thin, I think Mark Waid is great, but when Mark Waid is writing 10 different books, something suffers, if not all of them. And he hit that somewhere in the 90s, and when he started just writing a few core titles, it improved.
Mm-hmm.
Chris?
Well, my bad. I thought it was DC had completely gone to crap post-Infinite Crisis. I didn't realize it was, are they releasing too many books?
I see.
But I think that's related.
That's the thing. I mean, I got on and started reading a few DC books a few years ago, and slowly but surely, everything that was going on, like post, what was it, Graduation Day?
Yeah.
Titans Young Justice, whatever, book. And then everything kind of built after that. I started picking up the Geoff Johns Flash and the Batman books and a few other books. And then I got Godfall, the Superman. So I really started buying more DC books than I ever had. But now it seemed like after Crisis, everything crashed. I mean, Birds of Prey is nowhere near as good as it used to be. Nightwing, we won't even go there. Maybe with 125 and Wolfman coming back, it'll pick up again.
That's the other thing. I'm struggling with that because now I got to put Nightwing back on.
I didn't get Grant Morrison's Batman. It was kind of boring and kind of terrible to me.
And I liked it. I'm not a Grant Morrison fan, and I think that's what helped me.
I still haven't read any of the Detective Comics that Denny's written. They don't even look interesting. They just sit on my shelf and they're collecting dust. I mean, I don't know. They were so high, and then they just completely crashed. 52. I'm ready to drop 52 because I'm really getting bored with what's going on in 52. I mean,
there's nothing.
DC
big.
Is
not a lot
totally
going on in 52.
Suffering. The Teen Titans, The Outsiders.
Oh. No.
The Outsiders I dropped because I just could not follow along with it. And the art got really bad. All of a sudden they went from artist to artist. I didn't like it.
All right, well, I'm going to weigh in now. I like Marvel. Let me just start there. I have never been a DC guy. And although I have characters that I like in the DC universe, I could take it or leave it. And so for me, when you have all of these titles coming out, I cherry-pick the DC universe anyways.
Yeah.
Like, if it has Marvel on it, I'm much more inclined to pick it up. I don't have anywhere near the collection that you guys do anyways, but definitely when you put up Marvel against DC, I'll much more easily pick up a Marvel title because it's a Marvel title. When it's DC, I cherry-pick them.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll pick up the Raven series because I find that character to be very interesting. The Omega Men, that won't even come anywhere near being picked up by me. You know, the Connor Hawk one, nope, that's not going to get it for me, although I do like Green Arrow. But for me, it's very, I pick a character, and then I pick, like, one book up from that character. Like, even with Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps, somewhere in the near future, I'll be dropping one of them, and I'll be keeping one of those books. So I probably carry maybe 5 DC books.
So you're going to drop 2 of the only really good DC books left?
I know, they are good. I'll give you that.
The problem becomes,
Green Lantern is outstanding.
When it
and then
comes
Green
out,
Lantern
because
Corps,
it's very
that's
late.
The other thing with DC.
Oh, yeah.
All of the good books are never on time. Wonder Woman, Green
and
Lantern.
Yeah.
Those
oh,
are the Wonder Woman. Yeah.
These are the books I just wrote down. And DC has never, up until about 6-7 months ago, never had a problem with books being late.
Not until All-Star Batman and Robin.
All of a sudden, they said, you know what? If they're going to be late, why don't we let the other ones all be late? And that's kind of upsetting.
Yep.
Well, and the problem with DC, and I think you and I have the same problem, you're going through the previous guide, and you see a new DC store, or any new comic series, and you hate to be the last one on the train.
Yep.
And you hate to, you know, you pick up something, and, you know, Walking Dead just popped into my head. Everybody else was picking that up until me, and then I had to go back and fight to find the trade and stuff like that. So you pick up all these new series, and then it takes you 2 issues to realize that the all-new Atom is bad, and you drop it just automatically.
Kind of like the all-new Flash.
Yeah,
I agree
still,
with the
I'm
Flash.
I'm still on the train for the.
This goes,
like
you know
Atom,
what? This goes right
just
back to a conversation that Matt and I had 3 episodes ago, I think, where we talked about how long do you stay on a book before you drop it?
Depends on who it is,
and that's
on
the
who's
problem
involved with it. Yeah,
like we just talked about tonight. Firestorm is at issue number 28, and it's really starting to gel. Well, how many people stay on a book for 28 issues to see whether or not it comes together? And that is the problem, is when you create this many titles, and people have that much to choose from, or they feel compelled to pick up at least the first few issues of that many books, then all the books suffer because no book gets the chance it deserves to become, to come into its own. If you don't blow me out of the water with the first couple issues, forget about it. Flash is on life support at this point. We picked up the first 2, but if issue number 3 doesn't kick it into high gear, that'll be off the list. And that's the unfortunate thing. I am a huge Flash fan. I would love to see, you know, I would love to give it the chance. Oh, Indiana Jones just arrived. Apparently, Chris has a hearing impairment.
Look out for that big boulder.
His phone
is
set on.
Thing tonight?
I didn't think that the volume went that high on a
cell
phone.
His phone is set for stun.
Right. Yes. So, but in any case, that's part of the problem is that not only does it affect all of the other books, but then you again, you push down those number of issues that people will stay on a book for before they make that decision to get rid of one.
I'll throw out a question for you then. Why take what they were doing perfectly well with The Flash, Geoff Johns, Wally West, and everything that was going on, one of the best rogues gallery of any book going around, and so we dump the whole thing, we send Wally West off and then whoever knows La La Land.
Yep. Because when they relaunch the universe like they do with an event like Crisis, then they say to themselves, how many titles can we reboot and bring in all new readers that we've attracted with this humongous event? Because every time they do one of these, and it's the same thing with Civil War and Marvel, it's like, you know what? Follow this one issue, and then the universe is going to be so changed afterwards that you don't have to be a longtime reader. You can be a new person coming in, and they're always trying to kickstart. And they're losing their base bit by bit.
Peter Parker is still Spider-Man.
Yeah, he's just right. Called it.
But well, they tried that one time with Peter Parker with the Clone Saga, and the beating is still felt around the world.
Yeah.
So, but kudos to them for learning that happens once. Right.
And Indiana Jones is back.
I think Spielberg just walked into the room. You are popular tonight.
Set weapons for kill.
It's ever since he started painting again. He's like on demand.
Yeah. The Renaissance, man.
Crazy.
Now, with what we were just talking about, I got a little bit of stats because I'm going to have to go with some history because those who don't know history are doomed to repeat it. So for the DC people, in 1978, now, I was talking to James about this on the phone, and I said, James, remember when comics did this and this? He's like, I was two.
Right. Matt was 14 at that time.
Yeah.
That young?
1978, I was 10. And comic books were 35 cents, and then all of a sudden they said, you know what, they're going to 50 cents. Starting next month, 50 cents, more pages, more story, there's going to be more comics. And I remember as a 10-year-old going, okay, I'm having a hard enough time trying to finagle $2 a week for my parents to get comics and Star Wars cards now. How am I possibly going to, and Mellow Yellow, how am I possibly going to get more?
Well, we know you didn't kick Mellow Yellow, so it must have been the Star Wars cards that went out the window.
Yeah, so the Star Wars cards got the boot. But the what they did was they tried to do this thing. It didn't work. What ended up happening was they had probably 20 books that were supposed to come out. They ended up canceling them all.
Yep.
And it's known as the DC implosion, which happened in the summer of 1978. But in 1975, that's kind of when comics started to get a little bit of ground.
Yep.
Marvel really did a lot pushing into the media side of it, so DC kind of got dragged into that too. In 1975, and I'll give you the quick stats, 16 new titles were created, 10 were canceled out of those 16, which gives you a gain of 6.
Yep.
1976, 21 new series were launched, 13 were canceled. Now, combined, that gives you a cumulative of still plus 8 titles that were still going.
Yep.
1977, 12 new series were launched, 11 were canceled, which gives you now a net gain of 1.
Yep.
Now, the Superman movie came out in 1978, and I think that probably had a lot to do with it, too. They're like, let's just go gung-ho. They just did the whole thing. 8 new titles were launched, 31 were canceled, which in a 4-year span made minus 23 titles. What really bothers me was, I would say out of those 31 titles, I was probably reading 28 of them.
Yep.
The war comics, the mystery comics, all those books got canceled. And it just shows that, you know what, anybody can look at this and say this could easily happen again.
Yeah.
And for more of this, if you go to www.fanzing.com/mag/fanzine, they have this whole history of this, which is definite reading. You've got to check it out because, again, I'm looking at this going, you know what? This is going to happen again.
Well, and the funny thing about it is the comics industry has not recovered enough to think that they can go through this again. It's not as if the comic industry is at such a peak and a strong point right now and has such a base that they can afford a hit like this. They're just starting to sort of come back up to the top as far as getting more people reading. Again, we still talk about how they have not got the young people involved because they're all reading manga at this point in time. So focus a little more on building up your base and keeping your longtime readers happy. And don't worry so much about having an all-star creative team on every possible topic slash character that you can think of to just keep the machine rolling, because it's going to crash at some point. And when people drop an ongoing series so that they can pick up Raven the Limited series, they're not coming back to that ongoing series, because once you get off the train, you're not getting back on.
Yep.
So that's what's going to happen, is you're going to see these longer running series get the boot, you know, you got a Firestorm who at issue 28 is just starting to hit its stride, starting to pick on readers. If people jump off a book like that to go pick up Raven, they're not coming back on it. And then that's where those things go by the wayside.
Well, and not just new readers, but let's say it's somebody. Imagine all of us had dropped Flash years ago. We hadn't been reading comics for the last 5 years. When we walked into a shop today and said, oh, Flash, I recognize that. And I picked it up, and you're thumbing through, and there's no Wally West.
And
there's
who the heck is Griff?
Who's Bart Allen? You know, you may not know who that is. And how's that even going to bring people back? I mean, you were out of comics for a while.
A while, yeah.
And, you know, if you'd come back and been like, who's this guy? You know, let's say, well, Bruce Wayne wasn't Batman.
No, you're absolutely right, because the first thing I do is I walk over and I pick up Peter Parker, and I say, I'm home, Peter. It's been a long time.
Leave a light on for me. It's when he responds back to him. Nice to have you back, Brian.
Yeah, it does. And Peter says, come on over here, Brian. A couple of things have changed, but it's still the same old neighborhood.
Now let me give you a hug, and let's read.
Right? Well, and that's what happened. You're absolutely right. So you're right. I mean, if you're out of comics and you come back in, you're not looking for the reimagining of a character that is so completely different from what it used to be, or how in a lot of cases they have to go back and tweak with the character's history to make it more mature now and stuff like that. Some of the characters that we have grown to know and love are cheesy, and they were cheesy before, and you don't need to mess with their history to try and make them badder
or
more mature.
I don't want the X games in my comic books, I guess is the best way to put that.
Right.
I don't want Flash Extreme!
Right.
I don't want Flash.
Skateboarding Batman?
Right.
No, I want... Well, that might be cool.
Yep.
The cape gets tangled up.
It gets stuck. And...
Oh! It goes ahead. You know, it's injury waiting to happen.
All right, well, that is it. I think we've beaten that one pretty good.
Yeah.
That's our discussion question for the week. Matt and I are going to come back, and we're going to do a quick discussion about Joe Casey, who Matt interviewed at the July 30th Primate Show, and that will end today's issue. So we'll be right back.
What's it mean to be G.I. Joe?
America's number one fighting force, sir!
And that means...
Big muscles, sir!
And...
Big missiles, sir!
And we are back with our final segment today, which is the Creator Spotlight.
Yes.
And as we talked about over the past few weeks... You went to the Primate Show on July 30th.
Yes.
And were able to interview some very talented creators from the field.
Yep.
Today's interview that we are going to hear, and I let the cat out of the bag earlier in the podcast when I talked about G.I. Joe, is Joe Casey.
Yeah.
So if you could tell us a little bit about Joe and preface this interview, we are going to end, like we did last time, with the interview today. We'll sign off after you're done, but please.
Well, thank you. When I first got there... And met him. I never met him before. Like, Jamal, I've known for years.
Yep.
Joe Kelly, I've known for a while. So it was easy to groove into an interview mode with them. They're great guys. They're easy to talk to. And when I did my interview with Joe Kelly, the funniest thing was, he said, hey, you got to be really careful with Casey. And I go, why? What do you mean? And he goes, well, he can be really standoffish. He can be this and that. And he got me so scared.
Get you nice and worked up before you sit down with
the guy. He got me scared. He goes, you know what? You're going to ask him a question. He's just going to give you a yes or no answer. Don't get rattled. And I'm like, what? Okay.
Totally messing with you.
And I got all freaked out. Then he came and sat down, and he did the interview with sunglasses on. And he wears the sunglasses all the time. That's just him.
I've noticed that. Every picture I see of him is with sunglasses, yeah.
And it was funny because I was really nervous going into it with him. But all of a sudden, we got on a couple subjects where we just started laughing and joking. He's a huge Kiss fan. So we started talking about that.
You're familiar with the band Kiss, aren't you?
I've heard of them.
Okay.
I've heard of them. So we just went off on Kiss for a while. We talked about all sorts of things. After the interview was done, we probably had another half hour where we just sat and talked. A great guy. I understand his writing a lot more now,
yep.
Where he's coming from with this interview. So what I think you'll get out of this interview, and I can't wait to hear it. I hope to hear me very nervous at the beginning and then relaxing at the end, because it'll be exactly how I thought it might have come out.
Yep.
But Joe is a great guy. If you go to manofaction.tv,
yes,
you can find out tons of stuff about them, find out what's going on. They do a daily blog between the four of them.
I saw that. I've been reading that lately. It's very funny, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great thing. So check out the interview, which you will be because you're listening to the show. And we've got tons of interviews lined up, which I'm very excited about.
Yes.
We'll talk about that next week.
We'll talk about that more in the future. But for today, enjoy Matt's interview with Joe Casey. We're going to end here, so Matt and I will say our goodbyes. We will see you next week in issue number 24 of Secret Identity Podcast.
And we have to thank our friends Chris and James for stopping by.
Yes, for making our discussion question quite fulfilling this evening.
Yes.
Okay, have a great rest of your week, and we'll talk to you soon.
Bye. And Secret Identity Podcast continues with Joe Casey. Joe, how are you today?
Good.
Fresh from your stay in San Diego?
Yeah, fresh might not be the word I'd use, but I was in San Diego, yeah.
How did that go?
Good, good. Very big, very overwhelming, but we made a good show of it.
Now, how did you get involved in comics?
We're going back a ways now. You mean in writing and professionally?
Yeah.
I've always loved comics. I was into doing a sort of black and white indie stuff. Living out in Los Angeles, I ended up meeting a lot of professional comic book writers who were able to sort of pull the curtain away and show me how people actually made a living doing this as a career. From meeting those guys, I met one in particular, James Robinson, very famous comic book writer, and he, more than anybody else, really pulled me in at Marvel especially, where I got quite a few gigs basically on his recommendation.
Now, what was your impression of the Superman film? I will assume you saw it.
I did see it.
You wrote for Superman. You wrote Adventures of Superman. What was your impression of the movie?
I thought it was very well directed. And I thought there were some good performances in it. It wasn't the Superman movie I would write, but that's just how it goes.
Yeah.
In a way, I'm just glad that we have any Superman movie at all, and that those guys obviously cared about the material and put their heart and soul into it. I mean, that's all you can ask, really.
Yeah. Now, currently you've been working on a very critically acclaimed book called Godlands.
Right.
Very Stan Lee, Jack Kirby-ish in presentation.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about it?
Well, the first thing, Godland is not a retro book. As everybody says it because Tom Scioli does a very Kirby-like art style, but I don't write it in an old-fashioned way. To me, it's a modern book, and that's how I write it. The reason I wanted to work with Tom is not only because of the style that he draws in is something that I respond to because I'm a big Kirby fan, but he's very imaginative, very quick. We're cranking the issues out, and it's sort of like comics at the speed of thought. And that's the kind of book I wanted to do. And Godland's a very cosmic, sort of trippy superhero epic. So the art and the style and the subject matter all matched for this book to happen.
So once I get my eBay deadbeat to send me the copy of the trade that I won, I will enjoy it.
Absolutely.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Now, you are involved with Man of Action Studios. You're one quarter of it.
Yep.
I will assume the most talented of the four.
That's what I hear.
That's good.
Yeah.
You guys have a big hit with Ben 10.
Yep.
Now, what is your involvement with it, or as far as what stamp does Ben 10 have that was given by Joe Casey?
Well, I mean, we created the show.
Yep.
And all along the way, over the long development process, we've acted almost as creative consultants. We've come in and given story ideas. We wrote a few scripts in the first few seasons. But mainly at this point, we're just consultants. When they're sort of planning overall story arcs and overall seasons, we might go in and just throw in our two cents. We have one hand on the wheel when the ship is being steered.
Yeah. Now, does your writing have a political feel to it because that's how you feel, or does it fit the subject matter that you're writing about? And I bring that up with the new G.I. Joe that you're writing.
Right.
That Cobra Commander is the chairman?
Chief of staff.
Chief of staff.
White House chief of staff.
That's even higher up to cause some problems.
Yeah.
Are you political by nature, or is that just because of what you're writing?
I'm semi-political. I don't have the kind of stringent hardline views where I would say I believe in this and I believe in that. I guess I would class myself as a moderate independent. But I like to write things that have a point of view, and I like to have a point of view in my writing. So with something like that, the minutiae of politics interests me and the structure of politics. You know, why it worked for that story is because the chief of staff is really the highest position in the executive branch that is not an elected position. So it made sense that Cobra Commander could infiltrate that specific position. You know, I have my point of views about things just like everybody else, and like I said, I like my writing to have a point of view. So on the political agenda, that does tend to bleed through, but I like it to be organic to the story.
Yep.
You know, it has to fit with the story. It has to be a part of the story, not just the story as a excuse for my soapbox.
Now, nobody noticed the blue mask when he was walking around the White House?
Well, he wears a disguise.
There we go.
He's disguised as the chief of staff, so.
Now, you've worked a lot with Sean Phillips. How did that relationship come about?
I've been a fan of Sean Phillips since before I even turned pro, and when I got the Wildcats gig and they asked me, well, who should we get to draw this, I was just hammering on Sean Phillips, Sean Phillips, Sean Phillips, and it took some convincing. But once he got on, it was like perfect. I knew that he was the kind of artist that was very efficient, worked really hard, had a great style, and worked well with writers because he'd had long runs with Paul Jenkins on Hellblazer, yep, for instance. And I wanted to work with someone like that. I'd been in situations where the instability of artists that I'd work with had really kind of worn me down, and I wanted somebody that was stable, yep, and would just draw the story that I was writing. And Sean's a consummate professional in that way. So when we got to finally work together, it was just, for me, it was fantastic.
Now, as a writer, do you get to pick the artists that you work with?
About 75% of the time, I will have a suggestion that they listen to.
Yeah.
25% of the time, I have a suggestion that they do not listen to. Much to the fans' dismay, because some guys that I've put up for gigs that haven't made it would have been amazing on them.
Now, you wrote the Kiss comic that Dark Horse put out a little while back.
I did, yeah.
What was that like? I mean, I read and heard that there was involvement from Paul Stanley and Gene Simmons.
There was.
How much involvement was there, and as opposed to what you were trying to do with it?
Well, when I first got the gig, the main guy I talked to was Gene, because Gene's the one who's the big comic book, yep, fan. And I thought that Gene was the only one who cared about the comic book aspect of Kiss. And so I started to write a story, or come up with a story, the first storyline, centered on Gene's character mostly, or at least he was the entry point character. And I wrote up an outline, and of course I totally didn't even realize that Paul Stanley would be looking at this stuff. He looks at everything that, yep, Gene looks at. He's one half of that business.
Yep.
So when I finally got to talk to Paul, who, when I was growing up, Paul was my favorite member, you know. He sang most of the songs. He was the, yeah, rhythm guitar player. He was just the guy that I dug the most. So when I talked to Paul, Paul was like, boy, it read just like the Gene Simmons comic. I was like, oh, no, because that was not my intention to offend, yeah, him at all. But I was happy to get his input as well. So after I talked to him, the book became much more balanced, and I think it worked out well. We were able to do the sequel to Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park, which had never been done before. Yep. I can't believe it hadn't. So it was fun. But to be able to sort of interact creatively with childhood heroes was, to me, that was the big deal of that book.
I saw, when you brought up Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park, I remember seeing that as a 10 or 11-year-old when it was on NBC on one of the movies of the week, probably, yep, a Friday night or Sunday even.
Halloween weekend.
And cringing the whole time. And I've since got bootleg copies. Unless Paul and Gene are listening to this, then I have no idea of what I'm even talking about.
Exactly. They don't exist.
No. And I've watched it, and although it doesn't stand up to time, it's great. It's better to watch it now than it was then. I mean, I look back and I see what they were trying to do with it, and it's very entertaining.
My theory about all the stuff about Kiss in the 70s, it was geared towards younger, yep, fans. Whether they knew it or not, they were laying the groundwork for the kind of popularity that sustained.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone that went out to see them when they reunited were all kids in the 70s, yep, that probably didn't get to see them then because they were too young. But the way Kiss marketed themselves got through to those 8, 9, 10, 11-year-olds, yep, in a way that Aerosmith and, you know, Black Sabbath never did.
Yep.
So whether the regrets they may have, but it was, in hindsight, it was the right move to make for prolonged longevity. I mean, they might have faded away, just like a lot of 70s bands, but the fact that they laid that groundwork, again, probably whether they knew it or not, so paid off for them in the 90s and even now that it's scary. But I don't even give those guys that much credit. They were just going for the dollar, yep, and more power to them. But the inadvertent side of that was that they were cultivating a young fan base that would never leave them.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't know that Unmasked was a crappy album when it came out in 1980. I was 10 years old.
Yeah.
But it's still a great album to me, because anything that comes out when you're 10,
yep,
is going to stick with you, and you're going to have a soft spot for it, no matter what the quality is.
There's Shandy, Is That You? I mean, there are some great songs.
I've covered Is That You in bands I've been in. I, yep, love that song.
Yeah, it's a great album. No.
But I feel that way about comics, too. I mean, my favorite comics, the ones that really stick with me, are things that I read when I was 10, 11, 12 years old. Now, they might not hold up as classic literature,
yeah,
but they said something to me when I was 10, and, yep, you can't put a price on that.
Did you see Kiss on the reunion tour?
Of course. Are you kidding me? Several times.
Did you see the Psycho Circus 3D one as well?
Several times. Yeah. I was there opening night at Dodger Stadium. I went to the dress rehearsal the night before because my girlfriend at the time worked with the Dodgers, so I was able to get in and see that. I've had as complete and total an experience with that band as any fan would want, yeah. You know.
Favorite Kiss album?
I would say it changes, but right now I would say Kiss Alive 2 is my favorite Kiss album.
Now, getting back to the comic books, because I'm pretty sure you could go about Kiss all day, and I could too.
I could go about comics all day too. But.
What is on the horizon for you right now? What are you working on? What is anything new coming up?
There's more Godland coming up in the fall. We're starting up again in October with the second year of that. I have two other Image projects that I just announced at San Diego. One is a graphic novel called Nixon's Pals, about a parole officer for supervillains. And the other is called Charlatan Ball, which is a monthly series that's basically a psychedelic, trippy version of magic and magical worlds and other dimensions. And it's people think Godland is psychedelic. This is going to out-psychedelic Godland by an unbelievable amount. This is going to be like you could put your tongue on Charlatan Ball and get a contact high.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's something to look for. Well, Joe, thank you very much for your time.
Sure.
And thank you for joining us. Have a great time the rest of the time you're here in New York. And I'm pretty sure you're probably going to sleep the rest of the week because it's been San Diego to here, hopefully back home to at least catch your breath.
Oh, God, I hope so.